Welcome again to Whiskey Congress. I'm Jim. I'm here with Steve. Steve, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing fine. Just got back in town. I want to say thanks to Founders. They gave us more beer, but we didn't get back in town in time to get it cold. So we each had a chance to knock down one Azaka IPA. You knocked yours down
pretty quickly.
Yeah. So, and we've still got our bottle of Cleveland whiskey here. So always good there.
So we're coming off of Independence Day, 4th of July. You were in, you know, in
Greater
Maryland.
D.C. area, yes.
So, you know, a lot of national pride and, you know, festivities there. Might as well kick off the show with some of the, you know.
The 4th of July newsworthy items.
Yeah.
All right. So you brought the first one to my attention. So roll with that.
Well, so the NPR is tweets out the Declaration of Independence, right? They would take 140 characters and they were tweeting the Declaration of Independence.
The founding fathers would have wanted.
Well, makes sense, you know, just a friendly reminder, hey,
right.
This is what it's all about. I saw it on Twitter. I mean, we follow NPR on our Whiskey Congress account, and I said, "Oh, that's interesting." I thought nothing of it. A few hours later, there's just all sorts of, like, not, well, a few hours as it was happening, people were responding, and a lot of the people responding were conservatives, and they were losing their shit over it. They were claiming NPR was trying to start a war, an insurgency, a revolution. They were saying NPR was calling for violence and that NPR was a left-wing, leftist organization. Look at these terrible views. Look at these dangerous views. You know, the left is all about violence and libtards and all the other name-calling and all that other. And at no point did it register for a lot of these people that what they were getting so up in arms about was the Declaration of Independence, which was the reason why you had a day off on Tuesday, you know, which is why, according to most of your conservatives, you know, the flags and the national anthem and all that stuff is all centered around the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, I mean, that's the day it was signed, so this just in. So I didn't see that when it was happening. You sent it to my attention. I read an article about it. And, you know, sometimes we've talked about how a couple of people on Twitter can make a big story out of nothing. This does not seem to be one of those cases. This seems like lots of people got really, really, really upset. And it then I saw a few chains that were in this article where it was like,
yeah, you know, you had a number of people that were upset. And I guess the most disturbing thing is people not knowing their history, people not knowing basic civics, having an understanding of what these fundamental documents to our nation and to our democracy, what they mean, what they actually say. You know, if you look at any phrase from the Declaration of Independence. Now, you know, I graduated from law school. I'm obviously a student of civics to some degree, but I think that beyond that, you should just have a basic understanding. Like, this is what allows you and I to be able to have a show where we can criticize the president or people in government or CEOs and not have to worry about, you know, being jailed or being shot for it. So,
and not having the queen on our money and not having to speak the proper queen's English anymore. I mean,
right. I mean,
we became an independent country because
right.
of this document.
Now, having the queen on the money, I don't know. I mean, people, that's a big deal, I guess, but I think it would be pretty cool to be rich enough to be on the fucking money.
Yeah, okay, if you,
like,
are the
queen,
if you are the queen, it's fucking awesome, but you're not.
Right, if it's not, then it blows chunks. But I think it really represented a broader point of this derision that we see, or division of people, and people claiming to, I am a right-wing conservative, I'm pro-American, I'm a patriot, I'm, you know, nationalist, America first. How can you claim to be America first when you don't know the first thing about America? And the first thing about America is our basic Declaration of Independence, right?
That's followed by
our Constitution.
By the way, NPR, I guess, previously would read the Declaration of Independence on NPR radio mm-hmm. every year. And they decided, you know what? This Twitter thing might stick around. Let's expand our patriotic duty.
They're catching up with the time. And I've seen other things like this. On 9/11, Probably not. Who was the press secretary for Bush?
Ari Fleischer.
Ari Fleischer. Right. Ari
Gold would have been a much better press secretary.
Ari Gold would be a phenomenal press secretary.
Ari Gold is my hero. You know this.
I do. Which is funny because I don't know if you have enough Jeremy Piven in you to pull that off, but you know.
No, but I want to.
Okay.
I don't think that I do.
Although I've been known to throw a good, you know, throw a good rant every now and again that's very, very mean and cutting people down, so maybe I could. But Ari Fleischer on 9/11 tweets out sometimes his notes from 9/11 or his, like, just minute by minute retelling of the story of 9/11 on Twitter. I've seen him do it a couple times. I read every tweet every time because it's fascinating to me. And, you know, people give George W. Bush a lot of criticism. Most of it probably deserved. Some of it was just kind of, you know, piling on. But I still think that to me is just one of the more, that is, I think, for me, my JFK moment, involving a president, involving a national figure, involving our country.
National tragedy, all of us coming together, right, in the face of something like that.
And hearing it from the perspective of the people that were not just in it, not just experiencing it, but that were charged with, you know, protecting us and dealing with it and reacting to it, is fascinating to me. But going back to NPR, what they're doing, so they're taking that same sort of model. Let's do storytelling in this short form of Twitter. It's a long form document, but we're going to do it in 140 characters at a time and just spill it out there. I think is very, I love that idea. And I also love that it exposes people for being frauds, for being phonies. You know, you're going to tell me how much of a patriot you are, but yet you don't recognize the Declaration of Independence when it's being spoon-fed to you line by line.
And, you know, I actually saw something on HBO, and I don't know what it was, because I turned on HBO in my hotel, and it was literally the Declaration of Independence getting read by various members of Congress. So I don't know if it was part of Vice, because Vice was on afterwards, or if it was something that HBO did. But it was really like John McCain reads a line, Gillibrand, I'm drawing a blank on her first name, from New York, reads a line.
Sherrod Brown, Senator Congress.
I'm not going to try to give you the whole cast of about 50 people. But so again, I thought that was cool, and I would think that if you didn't recognize the beginning of the Declaration of Independence, shame on you. And if you didn't find it weird, I mean, the Declaration of Independence is obviously written in 1776 when there's talks like "no prince shall this." I mean,
just it's
cool to see the language of the time and think that's how different the world is today, and how the world they were writing about was in their time. It was cool to see that language in there, even though it obviously dated the document. But you would think people reading about what princes should and shouldn't have would tip them off that maybe this was a historical document.
Well, and I think that people skim, right?
True.
A lot of people, especially on Twitter, you know, how many people deeply read on Twitter? You see something, you read it once, you gut react. You know, it's like, I'm gonna retweet it, I'm gonna favorite it or like it, and then I'm gonna give you what I'm thinking, because what I'm thinking is so important and so intelligent, and it's gonna add to the conversation. Rarely is that true.
Right.
It's usually the complete opposite, but people do it.
That plus reading headlines and getting sucked into clickbait, seeing clickbait and not even clicking and learning it, and then reacting to what the headline said, is the same kind of disease. We've talked about that before, where so-and-so skewers so-and-so, and then you listen to it and like, no.
Right, and not digging deeper. It, big problem, not digging deeper, and this is something where you didn't even have to dig. All you had to do was just read what was there. So, you know, that created a big hubbub on the 4th of July and the day after.
And so did, a bunch of people on Twitter, including Damon Wayans Jr. And some of my friends on Facebook. So I was going to say a lot of black people, but I saw some white people do it too, that basically said the 4th of July celebrates freedom for white people because black people were still slaves for 80 years, and 80 years plus. And when Damon Wayans Jr. did it, it drew a lot of flack. And I'm just, I've got thoughts on this, but I'd like to hear your, like when Damon Wayans Jr. put something to the effect of, you know, I think you said like something about this being a white holiday because of what I just described. He said it more snarkily and more jokingly than me, and later said it was a joke, but it does sort of poke the bear, so to speak. It does bring up a truth that people try to avoid.
So what are your thoughts on this?
Okay, a couple. I understand why people get offended by it.
Wait, and you got to be specific. Okay, here.
I understand why.
Who gets offended by what?
Offended by the comment getting made on July 4th. I understand why people think it is an affront to America. Unfortunately, it's an affront to America based on a truth. So, I mean, it's not wrong.
Right.
It's not inappropriate. It's kind of like the Colin Kaepernick protests. I can understand why people take it a certain way, but if you look at it beyond the surface level, you can't deny the truth behind it, and that's what makes it an effective time to do it. If someone tweets that on March 10th, it's a tweet by a kid on March 10th. By the way, it does bother me a little bit that Damon Wayans Jr. is the star of a TV show, because it just made me feel fucking old. Here's a guy that was in a bunch of movies when I was a kid, and now his 20-something kid is on TV.
Right.
But anyway, that aside. So which anyway, that's my...
Also
that's
looks
my,
exactly like his dad. Which
he does also look exactly like his dad. So anyway, that's my thought. I understand why it rankles people, but when you kick it to the next level, it shines a light on something that people would rather not hear about. And
well, it goes back to, you know, I saw something on Twitter. I can't remember who wrote it, but the person said, you know, black people are really the only people who get criticized and, you know, verbally attacked for lamenting the, you know, their own Holocaust. Right, like you would never criticize a Jew for talking about the Holocaust, right? Like, oh, come on, like it wasn't.
Oh,
that
yeah,
bad.
Yeah. No, you're right.
You know, I mean, like you wouldn't have that. Like, you wouldn't go to, you know, the people that were in, you know, like Sarajevo or something along those lines, where, you know, there people were being wiped out,
and mass graves and everything. And say,
right.
Well, yeah, you're right.
And so, I think people, you know, when black people, whenever we talk about slavery, generally, the response from a lot of white people is, let it go. Get over it. It wasn't that big of a deal. You weren't a slave. Why are you, you know, why are you even talking about this? Why do you keep bringing up old shit, bro? You got to let that go. You know, that's a
I think that's an accurate description,
right,
of
I mean,
a lot of people's thoughts.
It's a constant response. It's just like, stop talking about it and it'll go away. And it's like, well, you don't want it to go away because there is the thought of, you forget your history, you're bound to repeat it. And while I don't think we'll necessarily repeat slavery, we have to look at kind of where we're at right now. And you look at mass incarceration, you look at the prison system, you look at the fact that, you know, there are multiple prison systems that essentially pimp out the prisoners, and they work essentially for free. And a majority of the prison population is black. And what does that look like to you? You know, I mean, a friend of mine, and I'll save his name, but he says, you know what, maybe we should figure out a way to use prisoners to do more labor. You know, I mean, that really can fill the gaps on a lot of things. And I'm like, that really is not going to look
good. There
are
a couple other organizations that did that in history.
Right. I mean,
it was not so good.
Yeah, it's a bad look. And so my issue with this is people's reaction. Right, like, so you don't like, you know, the majority of people who are criticizing this, or the people who are criticizing this, they don't like it because, oh, it makes me feel uncomfortable, or you're taking away from my enjoyment of this by making me think about something I don't want to think about, which, by the way, I don't even care. I just don't think that you should be invading my enjoyment of my holiday, the 4th of July. And again, going back to, so essentially, you're giving me shit because I'm me as a black person talking about something that legitimately happened. You don't like it because it affects your ability to enjoy something. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, totally get that.
We can't ignore the fact that, I mean, that's, and part of it is the problem, that whole, just don't talk about it and it'll go away. Just don't talk about it and it'll go away. The not talking about it.
And it's just don't talk about it because it makes me as a white person uncomfortable. Right. Well, sorry.
Right. I mean, don't talk about it because it makes me feel uncomfortable. Don't talk about it because, you know, it makes other people mad. And
like you said, a lot of people say it's over. Get over it. Slavery still impacts our society today. We both talked about this.
Right. And that's the thing. Okay, fine. I'll get over it when you guys get over it. And then you do actually treat everybody equal when you don't criticize someone just like... You know, this comes up a lot, you know, between you and I, and I talk about my paranoia in the workplace and my just paranoia in general,
right,
on a day-to-day basis and
driving down the street,
right, my inability to get comfortable in my own skin, which is, you know, a lot of black people talk about this, but for me it's difficult. It's been difficult. I can't say that I've mastered it because there's still certain things that I worry about. If I'm working and I receive a criticism, I have to go above and beyond. I have to try really hard to make sure that I'm not falling into a trap of saying, "Oh, well, are they criticizing me because I'm black?" And not because I think that they're criticizing me because I'm black, not because my employers are racist, but it's a mindset
that's been there.
And the reason why it's there is because that's something that has happened. It's happened to me, but historically and systemically, it's happened. It's a reality. We can't ignore it. You know, there's been multiple studies done on LinkedIn where, you know, people will put up, you know, you have a black person who puts up the resume and they have a very, you know,
ethnic sounding name
or non-traditional name. And then you take their same resume and you put it up with a white face and a normal name like, you know, Jim Smith. And all of a sudden the person gets a number of different interests and responses for their resume. So there's data out there. There's actual data out there that says, all right, racism has an impact on how we live our lives today. All right. And that racism,
and that's in the blue collar world, the white collar world,
it doesn't matter
in the prison system.
Right. It impacts us across the board everywhere. And that all stems from slavery, right? And so we can't ignore it. And on a day where everyone is talking about independence and freedom, you can't ignore those who weren't independent and or free.
You can sure try. That's just it. It's shining a light on something that people don't want to think about, don't want to acknowledge, and that's why bringing it to attention on July 4th is smart and effective. And whether Damon Wayans Jr. was making a joke or not, and the other people who were just clearly stating a fact, doesn't matter. The fact is, it's a statement that work hard towards making the reason that is still a legitimate complaint go away, and when we get there we can talk about it going away.
Well, and I think,
but I've got a follow-up question. I'm sorry to
go ahead.
So this might be an unfair question, but I'm gonna ask it, and tell me I'm being unfair if you think I am. Is there, when a young black person takes a stance like that, one of my friends in the comedy world, a young black girl, she's I think 24, put something, like I said, that wasn't even a joke. It was just a statement like, y'all white people are celebrating independence. Well, we didn't have that for 80 more years. Is there any resentment by older black people towards young people, or are they happy that they're picking up the torch?
It depends. I mean, there's no blanket.
That was a bad choice of words, by the way.
It could have been worse. No, you're trying to make a
I'm asking a sincere question.
No, and I'm not criticizing, but what I'm saying is that that's a pretty general and broad statement. And
true,
and
it's tough to speak for all.
Right. I mean, every generation X or older black person had different experiences. So there's going to be some that applaud her for saying that the way she said it, just coming out and, you know, kind of punching you in the face with it. There's going to be others that are critical. You know, I think there's a couple...
Because that girl has no idea what it was like in the 50s, 60s, 70s.
Not even that. Because you have your stay in your lane, black folks,
right?
Your Tony Dungy's and your Lovie Smiths and your Tyrone Willingham's, right?
Okay,
that are just gonna, you know, stay quiet and on the straight and narrow, and you know, not ruffle any feathers, and they're not gonna show any emotion, and you know, they're not gonna protest or say anything too loud or too crazy. They're just gonna, you know, straight down the path. Nothing necessarily wrong with that. Pros and cons to it. Then you're gonna have your more flamboyant, more outspoken, you know, black person who will protest, who's not afraid to show you who and what their true colors are, who's not afraid of just letting you know that, hey, I am black, I am proud, 100%.
Slap you in the face with
hate. Not necessarily slap you in the face with it, but they're not ashamed of it. Not even that, you know, Tony Dungy or Lovie Smith, and I use them just because they're the most, you know, kind of prominent that you see, but you do have, there's just a different mentality. And, you know, and I guess the comparison then is like a Mike Tomlin. You know, Mike Tomlin doesn't mind getting loud. Mike Tomlin is a guy, he's not going to just sit there in a sweater vest on the sideline. He wears his bubble coat, and he's got a touch of urban flair and style to him that, you know, I guarantee you it rubs some of the older black coaches the wrong way, like a Herm Edwards, you know. But I'm not going to use just football coaches.
I was going to say.
Well, I am using football coaches as a kind of a you know, a metaphor for the larger group of people.
Sure.
But that's kind of how we get broken up. And
well,
so
in a way, it's an area that it took black men a very long time to gain entry to and access to.
Right.
So it is a place where being black was a focus of, you know.
And it still is.
It still is, but I think, especially the first guys you mentioned, you know, they were the first ones.
They were the first ones. I mean, other, you know, like Dennis Green and Art Shell.
That's right. Okay.
But even still, you know, Tony Dungy and Lovie Smith, you know, fighting to try to win a Super Bowl, and you know, Mike Tomlin coming in being the third coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. That, you know, that matters, and that's a part of our history. That's a part of the story, because for so long black coaches were shut out, and even still, you know, there's a small percentage compared to the number of teams and compared to the number of black players. You know, there's still only a couple black coaches in the league. You know, other than Tomlin right now, you know, there may be some younger guys. There's Todd Bowles, and you know, a couple maybe. But point being, you asked, How do older people view those type of statements? And I think it's a mixed bag. It's a mixed bag of how they view it, and it's because it depends on their type of personality. Are they quiet, reserved, toe the line? Are they more outspoken, or, you know, and then everything in between?
You know, I think I've said this to you off the air, that I always had a hard time understanding why there was so much hatred towards black people after slavery. And I think I've got an analogy that's kind of weird, but, you know, I was like, you know, why would white people be mad at the people they've treated like shit? And I think that's the reason why. They know they've done people wrong for a long time, and now those people are at least, don't laugh at me when I say this, but now they're equal. The analogy that stuck into my head was, if there's a man and a woman in a relationship where the man is constantly abusive to the woman, she leaves that relationship. He's now got resentment towards that. And then he finds out she's carrying a gun. So now she's not only equal to him, or not only out of his control, but she's now a threat, so to speak, on an equal, or not susceptible to abuse, maybe a better way of saying it. Your eyes are huge.
I know.
Is this, no, am I, I'm just trying, I'm trying to capture the mentality.
People, you're going too far.
Okay.
Very simple. You know why they didn't like him after? You know why white people didn't like black people after slavery? They didn't like white people didn't like black people before slavery, right? So freeing them from slavery, it's not like, oh, all right, well, everything's cool now, great. We didn't really like you before. We literally beat you with whips if you got off the off the plantation. So now that slavery's over, we're just gonna high five and everything's cool.
It took me a long time to come up with that, Steve.
I mean, it just...
Sometimes, you know, I overthink things.
Right. I mean, it just... I mean, you had hundreds of years of white people telling themselves, telling black people that they were better by the right of God, by God's passage and want and desire, by biology, by science. Everything that they taught themselves and everything that they said was that white people were better than black people. So then when Lincoln comes through and starts this war and frees the slaves, that animosity isn't going to become less. It's going to grow. It's going to proliferate for another 150 mm-hmm. years. And that's the reality of it. I mean, like, I get where you were going but that's
sometimes I overthink things.
Keep it simple, stupid, buddy.
All right. Speaking of keep it simple, stupid, and changing gears altogether, Kim Jong-un is not playing nice. North Korea just claims to have successfully fired an ICBM they claim can reach anywhere in the world.
Intercontinental ballistic missile.
Intercontinental ballistic missile, correct.
I mean, I think it's been confirmed by, I think, okay. multiple U.S.
There's, there's no reason to deny it, or no right. reason to doubt it. Yep. They're claiming it. And there's a bunch of things about this. One, any attempts to negotiate or deal with him as a rational human being is just foolish, right? I mean, he thinks, he believes, probably, that he's descendant from gods, and he's told, their whole population has been told that. Do you think he's got the reality button or not? I don't.
It's hard. Obviously, he's a little off center.
I don't think you can be treated like that, meaning elevated like that, and not have your reality button pretty fucked up. I guess what I'm really saying is, I'm not sure he believes that the United States or South Korea wins a war hands down. I'm not sure he isn't convinced he could take over the world.
I agree with you. I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and argue that the man is sane.
Okay.
And I don't think there's any point in trying to get into his head to figure out how crazy he is. We know he's off enough to where he's a problem. And my solution for him, I don't know if there is a good, easy solution. He before his predecessor, Kim Jong-il, used the threat of nuclear weapons and even, you know, abusing his own people to get relief and aid.
Correct.
Right. He used it as a negotiation to, you know, it's like, all right, I'll calm down if you give us some money, if you give right. us some food or whatever. Right. Kim Jong-un isn't thinking along those lines. He is flexing his muscles. He is showing he has power. I think a lot of this has to do with what's going on. And you can make connections to Iran. He's seeing Iran get pumped full of money. I think everyone can agree that something's going on with Iran's nuclear program. Don't know if Obama's plan with Iran is working. I can't say. I don't know.
I can. All right. That's probably another topic for another day.
It is another topic for another day. But, I mean, there's something going on with Iran and their nuclear program. North Korea is seeing it. North Korea and Iran have been tied together for money. I've read that Iran could possibly be working on their nuclear program in North Korea. Because no one has good intelligence on North Korea.
So that's one really weird thing about this, right? Is we don't really see, they see out. Mm-hmm. They know what we're doing. But we don't see in.
Which is ridiculous considering where, I mean, we have eyes everywhere and can see everything, but we can't
see
there.
It's really tough to see into that. I mean, maybe we've got spies. Maybe we know more than we're aware of. But boy, I doubt it. I mean
I'm sure. I'm sure we do, but I'm sure we don't know enough to where we feel comfortable engaging them right now. I think we would if we had to, but obviously we want to avoid doing that.
So
right?
Apparently Trump did mention the idea of having direct negotiations with North Korea, and I don't know how I feel about that.
I mean, okay. Here's the problem. You know, Trump says something like that. I take it with a grain of salt. You know, he says he had negotiations and direct dealings with someone. They always come out and say, nope, not how it went. And I don't know who to believe. I'm not going to automatically dismiss the president of the United States. But every time the guy says he did this or that with a foreign leader, they come out and say, that's not how it went. That's not what was said. That's not how it happened. So, okay.
There's a teaser for what we got to talk about in a bit. But so let me True Confessions time. I did it again. I turned on the Patriot Channel. And Mark,
come on, Brittany.
I'm doing it.
Come on, Brittany.
I think. All right, I won't do that.
Don't you?
Mark Levin.
We should have did that when we were in Vegas. Gone to go see Brittany.
Okay.
Oh, you know why we didn't do it? Because the tickets were $550.
That's right. That's right. We even joked about it.
Holy shit.
She ain't that good looking. So Mark Levin says what we should do is show China we mean business by giving Japan and South Korea nuclear weapons. And I thought, that's one of the dumbest ideas I've heard in a long fucking time. First of all, and he did acknowledge that he knew that the reason Japan didn't have nuclear weapons is because as part of the treaty that ended World War II, of the treaty that ended World War II, we basically said, and you can't have a military anymore.
You don't get any more balls because you don't know what to do with them.
You didn't play nice with them in the past. And the idea that a guy on the Patriot Channel would say, let's give Japan a nuclear weapon, because there's people in this generation. Now, there's also the truth that we ended a war with Japan by dropping nuclear weapons on them. So let's not ignore that reality. But this guy's a fucking bonehead. I mean, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. You know what will make the solution better? More nukes. It's like Wayne LaPierre with nuclear weapons. It's, you know, the only way to stop a bad guy with a nuke is a good guy with a nuke. So anyway, I heard that gem, and I had to share it with you.
Well, here's, you know, I'm not going to get into Mark Levin. I'm glad I got you listening to the other side so we can know kind of what's going on.
I listened to
the
other side, but I didn't listen to that channel. But I would have found it. You don't need to feel any more guilt about it. I would have found it anyway.
It, you know, I'm not going to get into that because, I mean, it's ridiculous, right? I mean, Japan is a different Japan now than they were, you know, in World War II.
Yeah,
and Japan having a nuclear weapon, probably the least of my worries with everything that's going on right now from an international foreign policy threat assessment, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, in the 1940s, they had an emperor.
Right.
That changes things a little bit from a democracy.
Japan is one of the few nations that's seen the true impact of what nuclear... They know what an actual nuclear weapon is, and I think that it's a little bit different for them than anybody else.
And in two ways, right? Not just World War II, but also they had a nuclear disaster mm-hmm. in their country recently.
Which is how we got Godzilla. Right?
Which is how we got Godzilla.
So, I mean, they don't want that to happen again. But, so I don't have as many concerns about it. Like, it's not...
I don't have concerns about the idea. I have concerns about lack of logic.
Well,
let's get everyone nuclear and assure destruction. Okay, I'd rather have as few players in that game as possible.
Well, again, and that's the key. As few players in that game as possible... And I think one of the big issues here is China's lack of a willingness to step in and definitively put their foot down. And I have thoughts on why. I think China's looking at this and saying, okay, we could go in and probably put the pressure on North Korea by increasing sanctions, cutting the flow of food, reducing trade, minimalizing, and just squeezing them dry.
But here's the thing. The only people who will get squeezed are the people who are already getting squeezed, right?
Well, eventually, no matter how crazy Kim Jong-un is, he would have to acknowledge that his people are dying. And at some point, someone would have to say, listen, that's your collateral. That's what's keeping you safe. Because think about it. If there was a way to strategically just take out Kim Jong-un, right? Like, let's just say you could clear all innocent civilians away and you could just take him out and his leadership, which, you know, some of them are kind of bullied in the positions that they're in.
Oh, I think.
But you could, if you could just wipe them out, I think that either the United States, China, or Russia would do it right away. If you could wipe them out, wipe him out and his leadership, and then replace him with someone stable and sane, and have the country not go into an even further, deeper depression and famine and everything else, then I think they would. But China's looking at this and saying, if we squeeze them, the people are the ones who get hurt. And if we take him out, then it disrupts that region. It's right next door. It's right in our backyard. Then we have, you know, refugees from North Korea flooding into China. Hey, by the way, we don't need any more people. I don't know if you've noticed. We've got a billion. We don't need, you know, 20 million North Koreans flooding in. So I think there's a strategic reason why the Chinese are just saying, eh.
Well, and I think it also could be a political strategic reason. If, as long as that thorn is there and our only potential window to negotiation and conversation is through China, then they control the avenue towards another issue that we need them for. So when they right. want to bargain with us, that's a chip, you know. But again, here's the thing. I don't know how much more sanctions will do. I'm willing to bet that they probably don't call it a royal palace. Who knows what they call it? But the compound that Kim Jong-un lives in is as decadent as anything you've ever seen.
Right.
I mean, the Vatican looks at that and goes, damn, we got to spruce things up.
The Vatican.
Just no, the Vatican's kind of ornate. Just
I get what you're saying, but the Vatican's just, listen, yeah, we spruce right. nothing up for no one. We're the yeah, best of yeah, the best. Yeah, all right.
Anyway.
Have you seen our vault?
This is coming from a Catholic, but anyway, it. I don't know how much more you can squeeze that. The only way that squeezing them further works is if it hurts the people you were just talking about, Kim Jong-un himself or his direct reports.
That's not and true.
I don't.
That's not you, true. That's how sanctions work.
But these people have no power at all. None.
They do have, because
rebel, they've got nothing.
No. Not rebel. You. It's a cruel move.
But we're already doing it, and it's already working.
China's not doing it. That's the problem.
But the people are.
Not doing it. China's increased the flow into the country, right? I mean, like we're seeing it, and it's not. They're not doing it overtly. It's being done very covertly. But there's still and that's the reason why they just at the end of the day they just don't want to deal with it, right? They don't want to deal with the impact of either getting rid of Kim Jong-un. Or getting him under control. Getting him under control probably causes him to do something stupid, which causes an influx of people to enter China from North Korea.
Oh, yeah, I mean, all right, that's part of it. But I just also think that population is already suffering horribly. And
I agree.
They will continue to suffer unless, if we try to ramp up what we're already doing, they will suffer more before it impacts the leadership that I don't feel comfortable.
And maybe in that you can, and I don't know if this works, but maybe in that you get a new leader. You get someone who can.
If that was a viable solution, I would go. I would encourage it. I just don't know who that new leader is. I mean, they're it's a great
fruit fly.
There's a fruit fly in the studio causing havoc.
Driving me nuts.
These nuts. All right. Anyway, but back to a point you made in the beginning of this. I don't know the solution, and I don't know if there's anyone in the world who does. The idea of negotiating, the idea of having direct communications between him and Trump terrifies me in a way because I question the reality button on both of them. Not necessarily to the same degree, but I don't see when you get together, generals who fought against each other in a war, who may have made efforts to kill one another, but they were part of a power structure where they can sit down and negotiate afterwards. That's happened throughout history many times. I don't think we've ever had two people this unstable with this kind of arsenal behind them ever.
Well, that's a pretty bold claim.
Well, because there's nuclear weapons now.
I mean, there's a lot of crazy people, Stalin, Hitler, the like.
They didn't have nuclear weapons.
They were working on them. They were coming.
They did not have nuclear weapons.
Okay, but I mean, we've had some pretty crazy leaders ridiculous armies before. So but that's not the point.
And I don't want to compare either of those guys to Stalin or Hitler, but that's kind of ego-wise, you're probably talking about the same level.
Dealing with Kim Jong-un, I guess to deal with him, you do have to get a little bit into his psyche. And you have to figure out how do you manage his ego, but at the same time, penetrate his just ridiculous air of
superiority.
Yes, I don't know if you balance that or if you go one way or the other. You commit to one, you commit to the other. I don't know what the solution is there, because he's so unstable and you don't know what he can do. Now, what we know logistically about their weapons program is we're relatively confident, and I shouldn't say what we know, but we're confident that they haven't minimized, you know, a nuclear warhead to the point where they can get it on that ICBM missile and hit us with it. They're working on it. And we don't know. I don't know what the timeline for that is. I've heard, you know, they're probably at least a decade away from being able to do that. But right now, they can still load it up with something nasty and hit Alaska.
Or I think the most likely target is Seoul, South Korea. And that scares me more because if they shot a missile at the U.S., it would be in the air for long enough that our counter defenses would have a very good chance of stopping it. Now, I've seen a few things on CNN that said our anti-ballistic missile program isn't as strong as we like, that they've had successful and unsuccessful tests.
They had a missile got through and everybody lost their minds. But yeah.
But it's a whole lot better than if you're in Seoul, South Korea, where that missile's going to be in the air for half a minute.
Right.
I mean, those things move real fucking fast.
Right.
And they're not that far apart.
And North Korea and South Korea are very close.
Yeah.
So,
if that happened, you know, forget nationality and whatever, that would cause such a chaotic reaction in the world.
Or Tokyo, right? I mean, because Tokyo is close enough as well where, you know, and I don't know what Tokyo's defense system looks like.
I don't either.
So, I mean, I think that either one of those is a legitimate target, and there's some concern there, may be why Levin went to the, you know, give Japan nuclear weapons, and that helps to neutralize the.
Actually, his reasoning was to scare China that Japan might attack them to make China get more serious about negotiating. That was his reasoning from his mouth.
Mark, come on. Well, again, we're not going to go down that rabbit hole. But. You know, interesting story.
It's a scary time.
Yeah, it is a scary story that we have to keep our eye on. And hopefully, our commander-in-chief will lead us down the right path.
I mean, when I was in high school, there was legitimately the fear of nuclear war was openly discussed. You know, I mean,
they had you idiots getting underneath your desk. There's a nuclear attack. Get under your desk. Put your hands over your head.
We never actually did the duck and cover drill. But we did air raid drills when I was in kindergarten. And so I guess we did get under the desk. I was in kindergarten. I don't think I had a desk. I had a mat. They didn't make me get under
even
my
better.
Mat.
Even better. Good job.
We had to go to like a central area. And they had... But seriously, in the 80s, you know, and you can look at it through the history of movies and other media, that the threat of nuclear war was something you thought about regularly. And after the late 80s, early 90s, you really didn't think about that. It's kind of popped back on the radar for different reasons.
Well, I mean, it went away because, you know, USSR went away.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the Cold War ended and the big threat was gone. But now it's back on a totally different angle.
And you could argue it's because of that, though, right? Because there were a number of countries that were able to, once the USSR fell apart and, you know, you had a lot of these countries that were now independent that used to rely on Russia that had access to the nuclear program. You had scientists and weapons manufacturers and, you know, government agents that were, you know, selling that information en masse to the highest bidder. And that's how a number of countries were able to break into the game of, you know, nuclear arms. They had their scientists, but figuring out how to, you know, enrich uranium or weaponize, you know, these nuclear warheads, all was stuff that came from Russia or the USSR.
Right. Or
whatever you want to call it.
Right. Okay. So, we should wrap this up. We have to talk about Russia and Putin and Trump because that happened today. There was one story, though, you brought to my attention, and it was a pretty awful story. So let's close on something awful. the Muslim girl that was murdered.
God, thank God you don't have a show on national television.
Yet.
Yeah, so...
You brought the story. You thought it was important, and I want to get it in before we...
Yeah, I did, and my reason for bringing it up is... And I kind of... I teetered on it back and forth because it was a story that wasn't covered a lot. I mean, you could find it online. There wasn't much on it in the way of TV. You know, there wasn't a congressman that picked it up. There wasn't a governor. Trump didn't pick it up. You didn't hear anybody from the left pick it up. And so my concern is, if I talk about this story, am I going to politicize it? And it's the story of a young girl, 17 years old, Muslim. Her name was Nabra. And she was... coming away, she was walking away from her mosque during Ramadan, and she's with her friends, and 22-year-old El Salvadorian illegal immigrant. It's not clear what happened, but it seems like there was an altercation. Now, there's mixed reports on whether he started the altercation or, you know, the people leaving the mosque started the altercation, but there was an altercation. The El Salvadorian illegal immigrant, he chased after a group.
Right, okay.
And he grabbed Nabra, the girl, and he ended up assaulting her and killing her and dumping her body in a pond. Now, the reason why I thought this story was important was because this girl, Nabra Hassin, was young, vibrant, attractive. She was 17 years old. And she didn't deserve to die like this.
At all.
At all. And she didn't deserve to die. She didn't deserve to die like this.
Where did this occur?
This in Virginia, Fairfax.
Okay.
So, you know, she young girl's murdered. And then the guy who killed her, like, logistically, this didn't have to happen and shouldn't have happened because her murderer was here illegally. You know, he's from El Salvador. He wasn't here legally. He was working in construction. And so that story checks all the boxes for Trump and the conservatives to come out and talk about this is why we need immigration control. This is why we need to, you know, tighten up and secure our borders, right? That's a perfect story for
right.
them. But the reason why they didn't come out and they didn't say a word and you didn't hear a single conservative or, you know, none of the talk shows talked about it, no one talked about it. The reason why is because the victim was a Muslim. And so Trump can't come out and say, he can't bring himself to say, you know, this poor innocent Muslim girl was murdered for no reason other than this illegal immigrant was here and he shouldn't have been and he lost his temper and he killed her. Maybe because she was Muslim or maybe just because he was a sociopath, but either way, he shouldn't have been here.
Right, but, I mean, that's but the story we
didn't hear anything like that from them.
And then, but I didn't hear about this from anyone.
But on the flip side, we didn't hear anything about it from liberals. Now, Washington Post did put it out, and the story I put on our Facebook page at Whiskey Congress was a Washington Post story, which the Washington Post is very left-leaning. But other than what they put on digital print, or on you know, what they put in
right.
print in the digital space, you didn't hear this. None of the pundits are talking about this. None of the talking heads. You didn't hear any of your normal, your MSNBCs or your CNNs or anybody like that talking about it. And why? Why? Because they should be, you know, it's, well, you know, Muslims and we need to be inclusive and everything else. Because now the problem is that they've been fighting so hard against Trump's anti-immigration, you know, they've been fighting so hard against that they would then have to acknowledge
that this wouldn't have happened
that
without
this Muslim girl was murdered by someone that they say technically should be here, right?
Or shouldn't be chased out.
Shouldn't
they would
be
say.
Chased out. Should be here. We should be doing more. We should be more inclusive. You know, this is the land of the home and the free. Give us your, you know, melting
right,
pot
right.
of happy horse shit. And so both sides, because the story doesn't fit their narrative, they just drop it. They leave it right there. They say, you know what? Fuck it. I'm not going to touch it. So for once, you have a tragedy that's not being politicized by either side, and it's not because either side came to an agreement on sensibility. It's not because either side said, you know what, we're going to let this family grieve. We're going to let the justice system play itself out in terms of dealing with the accused. It just was because this story didn't fit their narrative the way they wanted to fit. So they don't say anything.
And it falls through the cracks, and the two quote-unquote groups involved have essentially no power in the media. So it's not going to get escalated to a CNN or MSNBC or Fox, because they won't listen because it's not in their.
Now, what I will say is that, you know, in the digital space, Fox covered it some, but it wasn't on the main channel, and their main focus was the fact that he was an immigrant from El Salvador, and they definitely were able to work around the fact that the girl was a Muslim girl. Right, they downplayed it and minimalized it. Even the police, in investigating it, downplayed it. Oh, it's not a hate crime. It was a road rage incident, which...
We don't know.
We don't know. But from the way the story is playing out, it should at least be investigated. Now, my thing with the hate crime designation is I'm not sure what it helps. I mean, especially when you're talking about murder. If it's murder, it's murder. Whether you're going to give them one life sentence or two,
right? But it was I always thought the hate crime legislation was basically a victims protection thing, so that's a federal crime. So that if a small town in the South wants to downplay a murder of a minority by a white group, that the brother-in-law, who's the sheriff of the accused, can't just sweep it under the rug because the feds can come in, right? Isn't that what that legislation's all about?
Again, you took a very long way of getting there.
Okay.
I don't think that's a part of it. That's why it got put into place, to prevent hate crime. That hate crime aspect of it is very difficult to prove. It's why you don't see it used often, because one, it's hard to prove, and you know, these federal prosecutors don't want to lose these cases. So
what happened to the Michael Slager case? Wasn't that legislation used there to make it a federal?
No, that was a civil rights case.
Okay.
You know, like he denied him of his civil rights.
I thought that was kind of the same thing. Difficult to prove,
and it is similar. They are similar because they both have very high standards of proof, which is why you don't see that issued often. Or you don't see those particular charges levied often, because they are very hard to prove. In the case of Walter Scott, you got a video of a guy running away and you as a police officer shooting him in the back and then dropping a taser on him.
Right.
So, I mean,
not as hard to prove.
Department of Justice took their chances there.
All right. That's, I don't know. Should we wrap it up there and come back? We got to talk about Putin and Trump, but
yeah, we'll come back. We'll lighten the mood a little bit and, see how it goes from there.
All right. So thanks. This has been Whiskey Congress. We are at Whiskey Congress on social media. We are whiskeycongress.com. You can email Steve and I at steve@whiskeycongress or jim@whiskeycongress. Please do. Please keep the feedback coming. You can also find us on YouTube.
Yep.
That about it?
And you can download us on iPod, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere you can download a podcast. Please leave us a review. Click subscribe on the YouTube channel. And we will see you next time.
Thanks a lot. We're out.